story. And Dr. O'Halloran joked, "Well, when they make the movie, I want Brad Pitt to play me." When my friend relayed this, I laughed. Then I did kind of a double take. "Movie?" I said. "We're not making a movie." By then, the book had turned our lives upside down. We were going places and doing things that, to be honest, if we had had any idea beforehand, we probably would have chickened out. On an average Sunday, our little church has about 100 souls in the pews. Now we were being asked to speak about Colton's story before thousands, to travel across the United States, and even to faraway countries to share with countless other people who have questions about life after death, including those who have lost loved ones, especially children. In a small church in a small town, not only do you preach, but you also do the weddings, the funerals, and the hospital visits. You also swing hammers and push mowers, mops, and brooms. That's all Sonia and I had ever known. Amidst the growing response to Heaven is for Real, the book, the most important thing to us was to keep our commitments to our congregation. And yet, the requests continued tumbling in. We spent a lot of time in prayer. "This is too big for us," many of our prayers went. "God, you've got the wrong people." "Trust me," God answered. "Yeah, but," we said. If there's one thing we've learned, it's that God isn't much into "yeah, buts." And when he invites us into a new work, he isn't always heavy on the details. For example, when he told Abraham to pack up and move, he didn't tell him where he was going or how he was going to get there. He just said, "Go." So we went. Since hitting bookstore shelves in November 2010, Heaven is for Real has been translated into more than 35 languages, and we've logged more than 50,000 miles by car and more than four times that in the air, sharing the hope and promise of heaven. There seems to be something about an ordinary family with a child's life on the line and the miracle that followed that has translated to more people from more backgrounds than we could have possibly imagined. The book is now available in the native tongues of the Netherlands, Korea, South America, Portugal, Indonesia, Russia, Croatia, Finland, Vietnam, Turkey, France, Germany, and more. A publisher in India translated Heaven is for Real into Marathi, a language spoken by 60 million people, mostly Hindu. We definitely weren't ready for the worldwide reaction to Colton's story and the demands that came with it. But thankfully, God brought people alongside us to help. Our extended family handles the mail and phone calls. Pastor Phil Harris, he and his wife Betty Lou helped us care for Colton when he first became ill, became executive pastor at our church, Crossroads Wesleyan, and does a fantastic job helping me to shepherd our congregation. In fact, now that Phil is here, I wonder how I ever pastored without him. Not long after Dr. O'Halloran's movie joke, we started getting calls from Hollywood. As you might imagine, when Los Angeles, California met Imperial, Nebraska, it was like the old story of the country mouse and the city mouse. There was a steep learning curve on both sides. Once again, though, God brought the right people. Folks like producers Joe Roth and Bishop T.D. Jakes, Devon Franklin of Sony Columbia TriStar Pictures, and director-writer Randall Wallace, all highly respected professionals who recognize that no matter where we live or what we believe, we all face the same question. What happens when we die? In 2012, when I read the Heaven is for Real screenplay by Randall Wallace and Christopher Parker, I had two thoughts. First, Randall was not making a documentary, but he was making a film that's true to life. Second, the script spent quite a bit of time exploring some of my inner struggles as Colton's dad. According to scripture, heaven is huge, magnificent, and beyond anyone's ability to describe it. And yet, there was my four-year-old trying to do just that. He said Jesus rode a rainbow horse, and I struggled with that. It sounded kind of cartoony, to be honest. Then I thought, Colton's a little kid with a little kid's vocabulary. What would look like a rainbow horse to a little kid? A horse surrounded by an aura of refracted light, maybe? I didn't know. But I did know that after his near-death experience, Colton knew things that he couldn't possibly have known unless he was telling the truth about his experience. I finally concluded that Colton's memories of heaven were from a child's perspective, limited to a child's language and ability to comprehend. Astonishing, but credible. Incomplete, but truthful. In July 2013, Sonia and I had the exciting opportunity to travel to Winnipeg, Canada, to visit the movie set and meet the cast and crew. While there, we had dinner with Connor Corum, who plays the part of Colton, and his family. In August, we went back with the rest of the family. Colton, who is now nearly 15, bent down and shook little Connor's hand. Later, Colton told his friends, "It was like meeting Mini-Me." Connor really did remind us of Colton at that age. He was so unself-conscious that he was starring in a movie, a fact that most people would consider a big deal. When anyone asks what he thinks about heaven, Connor doesn't consult a script. He just answers very simply, "That's where Jesus and the angels are." On the set, we also met actor Greg Kinnear, who plays me in the film. Before our visit to Canada, we had already spent a couple of hours Skyping with Greg and his 9-year-old daughter, who told us that Heaven is for Real is one of her favorite books. I was really impressed with Greg's questions and his desire to deliver a down-to-earth portrayal of a blue-collar pastor. I felt that if the goal was to cast someone who could be a believable me, then they got the right guy. During the making of the movie, director, writer, Randall Wallace was the person we spent the most time with as he worked through different aspects of the story. I had seen Braveheart, which earned Randall an Academy Award nomination for screenwriting, along with Secretariat, which he directed. It felt a little surreal to have a filmmaker of his caliber working on a story about our family. During one of our conversations, Randall shared that during the year leading up to actually shooting the film in Winnipeg, he had had a serious personal health challenge and also lost his mother to a long-term illness. I shook my head and said, "Man, you really did your research before you started this project." He smiled and said, "Yes, I've been in training this whole year." Drawing in part on his own experience sitting at a loved one's bedside with a scary prognosis, Randall has been able to translate our experience to the screen. I think it's masterfully done. While in Winnipeg, we watched some scenes being filmed at a fire station and talked with the people who were playing firefighters, some of whom are firefighters in real life. We were amazed at the attention to detail we saw as those scenes were shot and reshot again and again. Seeing the cast and crew pour so much time, effort, and energy into just a couple of scenes gave us confidence in how much they cared about our story, as well as a new appreciation for how hard filmmakers work. Our biggest hope for the movie was that Colton's story would be plainly told, that it would not be exaggerated or embellished. We feel that this movie accurately depicts Colton as a normal child in a normal family and subtly poses the question, how would your family react if this happened to you? According to various polls, about 8 in 10 Americans believe in heaven, or at least believe in some kind of afterlife. Another question the movie places before filmgoers is, do you really believe what you say you do? I think that's a huge, healthy question for all of us to ask. We often dodge God and questions of eternity until we face them at a loved one's funeral. We try to make ourselves busy so we don't have to think about it. But this movie puts the questions right up front. Do we really believe what we say we believe? And if the answer is yes, how does that change the way we live? After seeing this movie, I think people are going to be reminded that it's okay to struggle, that the very nature of faith is to believe and yet not have all the answers. The unifying truth is that heaven is a real place and that it gives us real hope. This past year, I participated in a fundraising banquet for a program that helped children. Before the banquet, I went into a room to meet some other program supporters and guests and was immediately greeted by a woman at the door. "Hello," she said, extending her hand and sharing her name. "I recently lost my 6-year-old daughter in a tragic incident." My heart broke for her. I reached out to her and told her how sorry I was. She told me that the children's book we wrote with Colton, Heaven is for Real for Kids, had helped her and her husband explain to their 2-year-old and 4-year-old that their older sister had gone to heaven, and a little of what she might be experiencing there. She said the younger children wanted to read it every night, that it was giving them a way to cope with the loss of their sister, offering the hope of heaven and the assurance that they'd see her again. I was blown away, humbled, and just about speechless. Since the publication of Heaven is for Real, Sonia and I meet people like this precious mom everywhere we go. People suffering incredible pain and incredible loss who have received comfort from Colton's story. We've been especially touched that so many fathers who have lost children have reached out to tell us how they've drawn comfort from the book. During my years in ministry, it has become very clear that a grieving mother will seek counseling or pick up the phone and pour out her heart to a friend. But men wrestle more privately with their grief. Somehow, Colton's story has reached them and helped them move forward. Heaven is for Real also seemed to open up new dialogues about eternity. After our book appeared, publications from Time to USA Today to Christianity Today ran cover stories about heaven. Television news magazines also examined the topic of the afterlife. ABC's Bob Woodruff, who himself had a near-death experience after being severely wounded as an embedded journalist in Iraq, did a news special in which he interviewed people who had had similar experiences, including Pastor Don Piper, who wrote 90 Minutes in Heaven. But much of the conversation about heaven was taking place outside the spotlight. On a flight from Atlanta to Denver, I was sitting in an aisle seat next to a woman who kept stealing glances at me. It was mid-2011, after readers had really begun to respond to the book. I could tell by the woman's features that she was of Middle Eastern descent, although I didn't know from which country. Eventually, her glances turned into a kind of stare. Finally, she leaned over and said, "Did you write a book?" I smiled. "Yes." "Did you like it?" She pointed at the bright yellow wristband I was wearing, imprinted with the book title, Heaven is for Real. "That book? You wrote that book?" "Yes, I did," I said. Her face lit with delight. "I am Palestinian," she said, then explained that she had married an American, moved to the United States, and become a Christian. "I am coming back from visiting my family overseas. I took your book with me, to my family. They read it, and afterwards, it was the first time we could sit down and have a conversation about God, and nobody got in a fight." I listened in amazement and suddenly realized that a young child's story can go where few others can. Through front doors, to kitchen tables, into workplaces, and into cultures that might otherwise be closed to discussions about God and eternity. A young child is a pure witness. While he may not notice the same things an adult would or be able to describe them as completely, he doesn't try to explain why he saw something or why his account doesn't align with what the grown-ups think. He just says, "This is what I saw. I don't know about that, but this is what I saw." A child doesn't have an agenda. A child isn't contaminated with adult think. That's why the world has responded, we think. We've just tried to relay Colton's experience the best we could, then let people make their own decisions. I think what we shared in the book, and now the movie, is pretty open-ended. We just tell people, this is what Colton heard from God. This is what he saw when he was in heaven. Now people are free to ask themselves, okay, what am I going to do with that? Acts 4:20, Todd Burpo, Imperial, Nebraska, February 2014. Q&A with Colton Burpo.
When Heaven is for Real was first published, you were about to turn 11 and go into sixth grade. What are you doing now?
I'm a freshman in high school. At the moment, I'm not in a sport, but by the time winter kicks around, I'll be in wrestling. And after that, track. In music, I'm in band, choir, show choir, and jazz band. The fun thing is our show choir goes to Branson, Missouri, every other year at the end of the year. And this is one of those years where we get to go to Branson.
After all the attention Heaven is for Real has received, do people in your hometown of Imperial treat you any differently, or are you just a normal kid?
My friends don't treat me any different, except sometimes when I travel, they ask me, "Can I go with you?" My family really keeps me normal. My cousin always says the name of the first book should have been The Boy Who Got Kicked Out of Heaven. My brother Colby is in third grade now. He and I don't really fight over action figures anymore, but we do fight over Legos because with Legos, there's no age limit. Since we're both in high school now, my sister Cassie likes me a little more, but she still gets mad when I hang with her friends, especially when she has 10 of them at the house. I do take it upon myself to annoy her from time to time. It's part of my job description.
What other interests do you have?
I like superheroes, and I read a bunch of comics. My mother got upset with me the other day, though. She had to change her password because I downloaded comic after comic after comic. When I finished one, it would say, "Do you want another one?" And I said, "Sure." I didn't realize it cost. That is, until my mom made me pay for them.
What was it like writing Heaven is for Real for Kids with your parents?
The children's book, I will say, was very fun because now kids get to know about heaven and they won't be scared of it. Also, I thought it was fun to be able to share what I had seen through pictures.
What do you think about the fact that there is a movie coming into theaters based on your experience?
First of all, I think it's awesome. But second, I'm glad that they aren't releasing it the same week as another movie that I'm planning to watch. My dad told the filmmakers, "It's a good thing you're not releasing Heaven is for Real the same week as Captain America the Winter Soldier, because Colton probably wouldn't be around to appear at the red carpet event for his own movie. He'll be watching that one."
What do you want people to take away from Heaven is for Real the movie?
I hope they find healing and that they can get wisdom from it, so that they know no matter what happens, God is always in there helping you. And no matter what Satan may put you through, God can overcome it.
Are your memories of heaven still clear to you, or have some things faded?
I do remember most of it, but some of it has faded since it's been 10 years. The clearest things I remember are sitting on Jesus's lap and being able to meet my sister and my great-grandfather. Also, the Archangel Michael's huge flaming sword.
What was it like to meet Jesus?
Being able to meet Jesus is one of the most awesomest things ever. Once you get to know him, it's kind of like he's your best friend. When you were younger, you always had one best friend, and when you were at your friend's house and it was time to go home, you would hide so you didn't have to leave. Whenever you're around Jesus, you just want to do that, because you never want to leave. From the set, an interview with Joe Roth, producer.
Let's begin with you telling us how this project came to you.
The last 40 years, I've had a habit of reading the Sunday Book Review in the New York Times with the hope that as a producer, I will find a book to consider for a movie, something that nobody else has thought of. But it's never worked because usually by the time it's in the New York Times, someone else has already bought it. So I was reading it one day, and I saw a two-paragraph section that talked about this new book that had been published that seemed to me to be a terrific idea for a movie.
It is an amazingly universal story because of some of the questions it poses and how it poses them in the context of a normal family. What was it about the story, the actual story, that appealed to you?
A lot of things appealed to me about the story. One was Todd's crisis of faith, the irony of a pastor who wasn't really sure of his own faith. Here was what he was doing every day for a living, but when confronted, he wasn't really quite sure he believed it himself. And then the conflict it put him in, about whether he should stir up the townspeople with his son's story or just put it aside. And he did the unsafe thing, which was appealing to me. He backed his son's vision, even though it could have potentially lost him his job and made him quite unpopular in the town.
Let's talk about the practical aspects. How involved were the Burpos in the creation of the screenplay?
They were involved in the sense that Todd was very clear with me that he didn't want to be in a situation where his son Colton could come up to him after seeing the film and say, "Dad, I didn't say that." So I explained to Todd that it's a movie and we have to pick out things that we want to help dramatize the movie, but that I'd be sure we'd support the specifics of Colton's words.
What about Randall Wallace? How was the choice made for him to direct this movie?
There was no choice. He was the person I was going with. I worked with Randall on Pearl Harbor and on We Were Soldiers. He's probably one of the five top screenwriters in Hollywood and a terrific director and someone who has a great deal of background in the ecumenical area.
In the translation of the book to the screenplay, it seems Randall had some very clear ideas about why specific characters had to be the way they were, and then he worked with the actors to create the dynamics necessary to tell the story from those multiple perspectives. Tell me a little bit about the evolution of the screenplay.
I think the most important thing about the screenplay is that it adheres to the basics of the book, but at the same time, tells it in a theatrical way. So sometimes time is condensed, and sometimes individuals are composites of a number of other people. But most importantly, it adheres to the son's vision, the father's crisis in faith, and the mother's confusion as to what to do. Do I support my husband or my son?
There's another line from Todd's sermon that says a lot about the theme of the movie. What we believe affects how we perceive the world around us. Can you speak a little bit about that theme in the movie?
We're all guided by what we believe. I have seen the Burpos interviewed on television, and I've noticed that with national newscasters, their first moment is one of cynicism, because that's what they believe. But what's very interesting is after a minute or two of conversation, they're saying, well, what's heaven like? So I don't care how cynical you are. You want to know what happens when your heart stops beating. You want to know, is there some place that I go? Is there some peace? Or is it just all about my time on earth? So regardless of the specifics of them, when those kinds of stories are available, just because of the idea that's brought up, those are the stories that people are going to want to see and feel. An interview with Devon Franklin, Senior Vice President, Production, Columbia TriStar Pictures.
How did you become involved with this project?
Joe Roth, our producer, called because he had seen a blurb about this book in the New York Times. And immediately when I read the book, I totally saw what he saw in it. It was an incredible story of a family dealing with loss and also with faith. It was just so powerful what this family went through and the amount of faith it took for them to believe what Colton saw and then not only believe it, but have the faith to tell it. So it was very compelling to me.
What about the timing of the release of this story in the marketplace?
This movie is right on time, because I think when you see the film, you'll see it deals with a family in turmoil, a family in trauma. But through the trauma, through the tragedy, through the turmoil, is an incredible gift they are given. The gift to hope again. It's that gift to believe again. It's that gift of peace. This movie, in the midst of all the blockbusters and all the special effects and all the superhero films, is going to find its rightful place with the movie-going audience, because I think it is serving and tapping into this question. Who are we? What happens with loss? What happens after death?
Tell me about cinematographer Dean Semler, how he came to the project, and how his vision is helping to tell the story.
Dean Semler is one of the legends in the business. He and Randy have a very special relationship, and Randy was very clear. If I'm doing the movie, I need Dean with me. When you see the emotion and the majesty and the power that Dean is able to render in some of these scenes, it is simply incredible. The way he will set up a shot with Randy or do the lighting, it could be something simple like someone sitting in a chair. To see how Dean is able to set up some of these shots, it's like when Dean reads a script, he doesn't see the words, he sees the pictures. He's able to capture the power, the majesty, the intimacy, and the epic quality of these scenes. It was a godsend to have him on this movie. We're incredibly appreciative and thankful that he would bless us with this gift.
Is there laughter in the movie? It is a serious subject, and there's certainly a crisis of faith, which, for a pastor, is incredibly poignant. But it's also told with a lightness of heart, correct?
Yes. I think this movie captures the range of human emotion. There are times when you will be just devastated because of the trauma and the tragedy that you see on screen. There will be times of pure elation when you see the joy of life and family and love. There will be times when you feel anxiety because you're hoping that it gets figured out, but you're not sure. There are times in this film where you have such a peace because you are relaxed knowing everything's going to be fine. I love that the film has such a range of emotion, but the idea of having levity was also very important to us. Thomas Hayden Church and Greg Kinnear have such great chemistry. There's going to be a lot of laughs in that dynamic, which I'm really excited about. I also feel like there are moments with the family. There is a lot of organic humor, which I think represents life. Even in the darkest times, there are times when you do find joy and you do laugh. And I think the movie captures that.
This is a hugely relatable story, regardless of who you are and what your background is, what your socioeconomic situation is, your race or religion. It's about people in relationships.
I do believe that this is a film that will unite people. It's a film that I think can break down religious barriers. Even if there are different theological points of view, At the end of the day, I haven't seen a mainstream film with such a strong affirmation of Christ, such a strong affirmation of Jesus. I can't remember the last time I saw a film like that, outside of The Passion of the Christ. And I feel like this is a movie that will transcend differences, because there's a power to it that unites people in the love in which the movie is transmitting it. That's the hope, and that's the belief, because so many times we let things that we don't agree about create divisions. I believe, and I'm hoping and praying, that this is a movie that will cut through all those divisions and really allow us to unify around love, around hope, and around the idea that there's more to come after this life. An interview with Randall Wallace, screenwriter, director.
Can you talk a little bit about how this idea of telling our stories relates to your motivation in telling the story of Heaven is for Real?
Storytelling for me is as natural as breathing. It tells us who we are and also helps us form an identity. We share our values through stories. We can argue philosophical ideas around the clock. It never really changes people, but a story moves our hearts. It captures our imagination. It directs us toward the future. Stories like this require courage to tell. Immediately, there are going to be people who are skeptical. I certainly am, and have been, of different elements of this story. And in examining what happened in the book, what the characters said happened, what they believed happened, what they reported experiencing, I questioned everything about that, and didn't always know exactly what something would be. But one of the great things about any story is that it has mystery, and it has suspense in it. And it is the suspense that draws us in. It's the questioning that keeps us moving forward in life, and the story provides some answers.
The way that you grounded the story in day-to-day reality, Colton doesn't just blurt it all out. It comes out in little bits and pieces in the course of everyday life. Tell me a little bit about your ideas and your thoughts in crafting the movie that way. Very much grounded in reality, very much grounded in community.
When we started this process, the one thing that I said over and over to everybody who came aboard to work on the film was, remember the title, Heaven is for Real. This needs to be a real story about real people. Every extra, every setting, every action, every word anyone speaks needs to be something that we feel is in everyday life. There's a great saying from the theologian Reinhold Niebuhr, who taught at Harvard. He said, "The genius of Jesus of Nazareth was that he found the holy, not among the monastic, but among the profane." And if we take the profane to be life every day, life that creates a great mystery for us when a child who is too innocent to be concocting, to be imagining, speaks of something as an actual experience, that becomes an intriguing, suspenseful story. Then it becomes a transcendent story when the issue is about him speaking of the ultimate questions of life and death and love.
The question of what happens when we die, is that one of the central themes of the movie?
The question of what happens when we die is certainly a question that everyone in life will ask themselves. But I think the greater question is there life after birth? What makes us more alive now? What is our faith about? What motivates us? What changes us? What is the instrument of change in our lives? What makes us stop hating and start loving, or stop fearing and start moving in our lives with faith and confidence? And this story pertains to all of that.
In the film, Todd says, "What you believe affects what you perceive." You wrote that piece in. Tell me what you are trying to say with that.
The question of faith is a powerful one because it's also the question of choice. Do we have a choice about what we believe? There are those people who say, "I don't believe in God." That doesn't trouble me. C.S. Lewis, who was the great voice of Christianity throughout the last century, considered himself an atheist most of his life. I don't think that the label anyone gives limits them, and I don't think we should allow our own labels to limit each other. But it's our sense that we just might find out that life is greater than we have ever imagined, that love might really happen, that we might not only find love, but we might also give it. That, to me, is faith.
So in terms of depicting heaven, it's a difficult thing. It's been done many ways, not always that well. Certainly something that I think would have been a huge consideration as you went into this project. Can you talk about your thoughts on what you wanted and how that evolved in this process?
depicting heaven is a challenge for any filmmaker, and most of the time I think filmmakers cop out. You don't want to do something because you're afraid to depict something that's supposed to be transcendent and otherworldly, sacred, holy, things that, by their very nature, we, in our human form, don't have the opportunity to see. But I think this story turns that concept on its ear. I think this story says heaven is real, and we take seriously the notion on earth as it is in heaven. We want to show what Colton says he saw in heaven, and for me, that meant things we can see, things that he had seen in his own life. What would that look like if it were, in fact, heavenly? From the director's chair, thoughts on casting choices, Randall Wallace.
How did you come to the choice of Greg Kinnear to play Todd Burpo?
In casting for Todd Burpo, there was one person that came to mind, Greg Kinnear. I knew Greg from working with him on We Were Soldiers. He and I are friends, and I wanted someone who could play both the masculinity of Todd Burpo, a guy that installs garage doors for the main part of his living, but who could also play the charisma, who could speak with such power, and who could be a caring and loving father, a thoughtful, sensitive father. For all of that, I thought Greg was just the perfect guy.
And Kelly Riley to play his wife. Tell me a little bit about that casting process and why you chose her.
Kelly Riley was a different kind of choice. I had never met Kelly. I'd only seen her work a couple of times and had been deeply impressed by it. But I was even more impressed when I got to meet her in person. I knew in the first 10 seconds that she had to be Sonya. If I could get her, then I was going to, because she had such an earthiness, as well as a delicacy. She was so strong and so fiery and so attractive. So many people believe that Christians, and particularly the wives of ministers, would be these sexless, sweet, butter-wouldn't-melt-in-their-mouth kinds of people. And that was the opposite of what I thought Sonya was or should be. And Kelly just had this sense of romance and charisma. You couldn't take your eyes off of her. And when she's in any scene, her hair draws light from the sky. She's just magnificent in this movie.
And what about young Connor Corum? Tell me about your search to find someone to play Colton Burpo.
Finding someone to play Colton was a huge challenge. Every one of us at the core of the movie was worried about it, because the movie would not succeed if the child seemed artificial. If you were watching him and you believed that he is reciting lines, you would never believe any of what he was saying. And part of what makes the story compelling is out of the mouths of babes. A 4-year-old boy is saying with absolute innocence, "This is what I saw, this is what I experienced." So we had an international search through the internet and casting directors in various cities across the continent, looking at different people, advertising, inviting people to put their children on tape and send them in. That filtering process got narrower and narrower. We were about to do casting in Los Angeles with Greg coming in to read with the boys who were going to film it, and we had one extra slot that we had not filled. We had several different wonderful boys picked out as contenders. We had one extra spot, and we had not included Connor because he was too young. He had not yet turned 6, and that would limit us too much in the time we could use him. But we watched his audition tape and thought, we've got to try this boy. As soon as he came in and started to read, we knew this had to be our Colton.
Both Greg and Kelly have said in their interviews that he steals every scene. Tell me a little bit about how you worked with him, because being his first time and being so young, there has to be a very special approach in working with a child.
First of all, I'm a father of sons. I love boys. I love little boys. I love who they are. I'm a little boy myself still at heart, and I wanted him to feel comfortable. I wanted him to feel part of a family. Whenever I work on a movie, I want everyone in the cast and crew to be participating in the spirit of the movie. And I wanted him to come onto the set and feel that he was just a part of a great big family. So we worked a lot on that. His mother really worked with him on learning his lines, and he came in prepared. He's a brilliant young man. Beyond that, there were times when I could just say, action, and we would film it. Greg was always wonderful about positioning and working with him, and the magic would happen right there. Other times, he would be full of energy and bouncing off the walls and distracted. He'd have been out playing with the other kids on the set at a little special play area we had for them, and he'd be full of sugar or excitement, and we'd have to wait and let him calm down. Sometimes I would talk with him and tell him various ways I'd like him to try to say the line, and he would always do his best. Ultimately, he forgot that it was a movie, and he simply began to be that character in that space, which is what we want of any actor. It was then that he became riveting.
The way the story is told is not just about Todd and Colton. It's not even just about the Burpo family. It becomes more about how this occurrence influences and affects all of the people in the church community, and through them, the wider community. Tell me a bit about your choice there in casting people like Margot Martindale and Thomas Hayden Church to be those people close to the Burpo family.
The casting of the people around the Burpos was crucial. I had tried to synthesize characters. I didn't want to try to portray individual, specific people in the lives of the Burpos as much as I wanted to create someone who would be the synthesis of all of them, somebody that would be a concentrated emotion and figure in their lives. So the characters Nancy and Jay, that are played by Margot Martindale and Thomas Hayden Church, were characters that I put together from the various pieces. And the only one I thought of was Margot. I'd worked with her on Secretariat. She was so profoundly powerful and natural, a magical presence and a thrill to work with. The first thing she ever said to me was, "Well, you're better looking than I thought." So I walked up to her on set thinking that I would get a little more ego stroke from Margot, because she's a pro, and she knows that you should flatter the director. She was talking with Thomas. I walked up and said, "Hi, Margot," waiting for her to just, you know, hug me and gush about me a little bit. And she went, yeah, Randy, hi. Have you seen how good-looking Thomas is?" And started feeling his biceps. And I said, "Margot, I'm writing you right out of the movie." But she was magical to every person on the set, and all of that is wonderful. But when the scene starts and she walks out and starts to talk with Greg, with Todd Burpo in the story, you feel you are seeing a part of life, that you are just getting to witness something moving and something straight from the heart. Thomas is like a force of nature. I had never gotten to work with Thomas, but he was the first and only person I thought of for this, too. Thomas is from the South. He's from Texas. He has a rootedness in what is natural, and a gift for playing someone that you can completely believe is both a volunteer fireman and a banker and Todd Burpo's best friend. From the Actors, an interview with Greg Kinnear, Todd Burpo.
What was it about this film that made you want to be involved?
I was familiar with the work of both Randy Wallace and Joe Roth. Randy directed a movie I was in called We Were Soldiers. I had a great experience with him. The fact that Randy had been engaged enough by this book to adapt the screenplay was the first hint for me that something good was going on here. And certainly as a writer, Randy is a really talented guy. The script simply read like an honest story of a family who experienced something quite extraordinary.
Let's talk about community and how this film shows how being in community empowers people and supports them through the tougher times in their life.
Imperial, Nebraska is a small town. It's 1,900 people, and not everybody has just one job. Todd's got 5 jobs that he's working at any given moment. He's a busy guy. It takes a lot to run a town, so there's a sense of support and community in a place like that. But at the same time, it kind of ups the stakes. You can't get lost in a town like that. You can't have an experience and have it in any way hidden or swept away. Everybody is deeply aware to some extent of what everyone else is doing. And so that creates some difficulty and some challenges for the Burpo family. At the same time, it's also sort of a big catcher's mitt for the emotional wallop they took with all of this, including Colton almost dying. The nice thing is you have a lot of people there to back you up and lend a hand, and there's something great about that.
In many ways, this is a story about a man who is forced, in extraordinary circumstances, to examine his own belief system. And in a way, it's a crisis of faith made even more poignant by the fact that he's a pastor. Can you talk a little bit about that in terms of the evolution of the story?
Whether you're a Muslim or Christian or atheist or whatever, people have belief systems. And as a pastor, obviously Todd has a very clear personal belief system. Plenty of stories take somebody in that role and have them question everything that they believe. Here, Todd is being challenged to truly believe what he wants to believe. That can be difficult, but he begins to have his own questions and skepticism diminished by the weight of the specifics that his son reveals. His son is a 4-year-old kid, so there's no affectation to anything. He's just complete innocence. A child at that age can have an incredibly huge imagination, but they can also say things that are completely pure. They believe it with all their heart. Todd's attempt to sift through what's real and what's not in all of this is really interesting.
There are aspects of the story that relate to the family in terms of your relationship with your wife, Sonia. How did Colton's revelation about what he saw in heaven affect Sonia and Todd as a couple? And how does Sonia support Todd in this crisis of faith?
There's some element, at least in our story, of Sonia being sensitive to what's happened. She's hearing her son and seeing her husband deal with this incredible story. But at the same time, this is a family that is struggling financially. If Todd ends up losing his job as a pastor, a lot of things are going to change for the family. And I think Sonia is deeply aware of that. She's trying to walk the line of letting Todd find himself an answer in the story. And at the same time, she's saying, we've got a life and we've got a family that is somewhat in jeopardy here. So she's got a balancing act. And they deal with that in an interesting way, as any couple would, as any family would.
That leads me to ask you about working with Connor as Colton. He's a very young boy. He's just turned 6. It's his first movie. Tell me how it was.
Yes, young Connor. He was 5 when we started on this picture, but he's aged into the ripe old age of 6 now, playing a 4-year-old. Connor is great. He's kind of the greatest version of an actor in the sense that there's no actor in him. And so everything that he does is just on instinct. It's effortless. It's just kind of there without any sort of artificiality to it. It really makes me mad. He really is talented. I think without any self-awareness to his own ability. And he's great fun to watch. And we have Dean Semler, one of the great cinematographers of all time, setting up these vast prairie shots that young Connor comes walking into. Once the kid appears, the rest of us disappear. Didn't W.C. Fields warn us that it's all about doing movies like this? I'm in trouble. He's great. An interview with Kelly Riley, Sonia Burpo.
What was it about this project that interested you, that made you want to be a part of it?
So many things attracted me to it. It's just such an extraordinary story coming out of a very ordinary place. I was intrigued by what happened to this very regular family in the middle of nowhere, how it affects them so deeply and changes their lives on so many different levels. It always has to start with wanting to know more. How do they deal with it? How does one begin to handle something like that? How do they live a normal life again? And obviously they didn't just go, oh, well, that's a nice thing, Colton, and get on with their life. It challenges them tremendously.
Let's talk about Randall's interpretation, taking the book off the page and creating a cinematic world.
I was very certain that this could be an extraordinary story to be told, or this could be done in a sort of airy-fairy or child's play kind of way. You have to believe in certain things to be able to be part of this movie, to experience it. And I came at it feeling that if this is rooted in reality, rooted in truth, meaning that these people experience confusion and fear and joy and passion and all those things that as human beings we experience, then I believe them. I'm invested in them in a certain way. I will buy more of this little boy's story as an audience member just thinking of a movie that I would want to see. His intention behind this movie was to tell a beautiful story of regular people, not heroes, not the sort of movie-type people that we can't relate to, but firemen, teachers, the guy that works in the local store, people living regular lives with regular problems, with something extraordinary that happens to them. I really like that.
Obviously, the whole family is affected by what happens. How does Sonia support Todd? What's her role in this crisis situation?
It becomes a crisis situation, as you said, only in regards to how Todd, as a father and as a pastor, can't really come to terms with what's happened. He has to understand and believe and figure it out. He asks himself, what am I preaching? What is my truth? And he undergoes a sort of dark night of the soul. I think Randall coined that phrase for him. And Sonia, as his wife and friend, his partner in life, she has to support him. And she does. She loves him wholeheartedly. She would do anything for him and anything for her family. She wants him to be happy. But she can't go where he's going because she doesn't handle it the same way he does. In playing her, I feel like she doesn't need to have all the answers. This woman handles things slightly differently. As women, I think we're more instinctive. We're more emotional. We're more aware that things can just be a mystery. This is not to say that she isn't practical. She is. It's not that she's coming up against him with another argument, saying this is what she thinks. She's just open to other possibilities. She's also open to it being the truth, what her four-year-old has done and experienced, and allowing it to be a mystery. And I love that about her. She doesn't need to wrestle it to the ground. She can accept it. It's something quite beautiful. And then, go make dinner. Because that's what's really important.
I want to ask you about working with Connor. What was it like?
I'm going to miss Connor terribly. Obviously, it's his first acting experience, but I think at that age, it's not acting. We can learn a lot from him. He's very present. He's very in the moment. He just gets on with it and does it. And he's very spontaneous and from a place of playing, playing from his imagination. I don't think he's thinking, how am I going to play this scene? Whereas me and Greg are in the corner tormented by it. Connor has worked very hard with his mom on his lines, so he's playing with his toys, and then he arrives on the scene, and he goes with whatever is given to him in the moment. It's very pure and very pleasant to work with. He's a joy. He's a little lad. He's a real boy, and he's had a blast. I would never think of a movie set as a healthy environment for a kid. I think before this, I would have never suggested anyone to do that with their children. But if you're going to put your kid in a movie, I'd do it with Randall Wallace directing. He takes such good care of everyone. There's a lot of patience and a lot of love that comes from him. An interview with Margot Martindale. Nancy Rawlings.
Tell me, Margot, what draws you to a project? Generally, what is it you're looking for, and what was it about this one that attracted you?
Well, first of all, what draws me to a project is if I get to do something I haven't done before. That's number one. But what drew me to this was because Randall Wallace was directing it. He directed me in Secretariat, and I just absolutely adore him.
What is it that you like about this movie?
I like that there's a conversation that will hopefully happen after this movie. I like that there is a community of people helping each other. I love that. I love that there is a family of people there for each other. I just hope there's a glimpse of light from this. You know, skeptics will maybe remain skeptics.
What do you think this film has to say about the support of a community?
It's so interesting that you ask that, because just recently, since January, I lost one of my closest friends. My husband and I both, we nurtured him till the end because he was alone. He had no church family, so he truly was alone, and we were there for him. We have another friend that has just gone into hospice, and she said when she chose her hospice, I choose the hospice where all my church family can get to easily. She is a single woman and has no family, but her family is the community of her church. So I think that having that kind of support and sharing pain and sharing those things with someone is incredible. It would be very hard not to have that in your life, I think.
Tell me a little bit about Nancy Rawlings, your character in the movie.
My take on Nancy is that she's a very conservative, upstanding church leader and a very wealthy lady. I don't mean conservative views in that she is to the right fundamentalist. I mean that she is a very middle-of-the-road, very traditional churchgoer, and she's a woman who has lost a child. Her son has been killed. So I think she's going through a lot of pain and bitterness, trying to find her way back to being open to love again. And so her relationship with God has become a struggle. Her faith has become a struggle. Then Todd tells this story and wants everyone to believe that his son went to heaven and came back. Well, that makes her angrier with God. If he went to heaven and came back, why wasn't my son given back to me? Her journey is to understand that God loves her and her son just as much as he loves Todd and Colton. And I believe there's a breath of grace in that. Grace. Grace is a gift. There's a wideness in God's mercy. An interview with Connor Corum. Colton Burpo.
Tell me about you. Not about Colton, but about you. What's the most fun thing about working on a movie or working on this movie?
That if your birthday is coming up on one of the movie days, they get to celebrate it with you. When I turned 6 and I was doing the movie, Spider-Man came. It was awesome.
Today you got to do something fun, right? You want to tell me about what you did today with Greg?
We got to do teeter-totter, but Greg called it turbo-totter, and we went really fast.
What about the story? Can you tell me, in your own words, what the story is about?
It's about Colton Burpo going to heaven and coming back to Earth to tell everyone. Because when they go to heaven, they won't be scared. Because they'll know what it will look like.
Who is they?
The people that Colton told.
You don't have to tell me the whole story. Just what's the most important thing that you think that the story is about?
The family being together.
You've been listening to the audio production of Heaven is for Real. Text copyright 2014 by Heaven is for Real Ministries, Incorporated. Production copyright 2017 by Thomas Nelson. No portion of these recordings may be reproduced without prior written consent of the publisher. For more information on other fine books and audio products from Thomas Nelson, please visit your favorite retailer or visit us online at thomasnelson.com. Heaven is for Real was recorded at Paragon Studios in Franklin, Tennessee.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.